Welcome to Follow Your Kind Podcast, a show where we explore the meaning of kindness and how we can express it in our daily lives. My name is Christina, and I'm your host. And we are live.
Yes.
All right.
Hi, everyone. My name is Christina, and today I have Kyla as my guest. Kyla is the founder of the beautiful farm sanctuary south of Atlanta, Georgia. It's called Full Circle Farm Sanctuary, and I'm very much excited to have her as a guest today on the podcast show.
Hi, Christina. Good to be here.
Thank you. Hi, Kyla. So we'll dive right in, just tell us about a little bit about yourself, where you're from and where you're going.
Okay. I grew up on a little family farm in northwestern Pennsylvania, and I was in a large family, seven kids. I was a middle child, and so I, from the very earliest memories I have, were a lot of them outside among the animals. You know, I just always had a relationship toward animals, and actually loved just hanging out with them. It was very peaceful to me, and I treasured those times. I was kind of, you know, a little bit socially awkward. I felt more comfortable around animals than most people.
I felt it instantly when I just drove in, and just the feeling of being in nature in this beautiful weather, and just being surrounded by animals. It's just such a profound sense of peace and serenity right away. And I don't know if I had similar experiences growing up, and I don't know, I don't think I realized until I actually moved to the United States is how lucky we've been to get that, because most children nowadays, they don't experience that.
No, you're right. And even as an adult now, when I'm, you know, caught up in doing so much administrative work or on the computer or on the phone, just doing the business of the sanctuary, there's so many times where I just drop everything and go out in the fields to hang out, you know, even silently with the animals. It just recharges my batteries.
Yeah.
And being around them is a very positive feeling, and meditative even.
So I know among many amazing things that you have achieved, you have also built and founded this Full Circle Farm Sanctuary. I know you're a vegan and activist. Would you talk a little bit about how did you get on this path?
Well, if I go back to my childhood where I lived on the little farm, and also relatives had farms like dairy farms, uncles and such, and I witnessed a lot of, you know, even though I loved being around the animals and that was very nurturing to me, I also witnessed such suffering and cruelty, like baby calves being torn away from their mothers so the milk could then go to people, chickens who I hung out with in the yard one day and ended up, you know, with their heads cut off and in a bucket of hot water, having their feathers pulled out and plucked, and then on the table that night. And so it actually, I was very in tune with the animals, and so it really troubled me and even traumatized me as a little kid. And so I started questioning in my own way as a child, like, wait a minute, why are we eating these friends, you know, and it bothered me. And so I think that was in my mindset early on. But if you fast forward then to my, you kind of learn, you're socialized to just kind of push that stuff down.
Yeah.
And so you just, oh, well, I'm not going to deal with it. So you, a coping mechanism, I believe. So I kind of squelched it down. And then later in life, when I was 28, I got a random mailing from PETA. And it just, you know, talked about the treatment of animals and animal agriculture and such. And it literally, it was like, this is it. I know all this, and this is true, and I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And I went vegan overnight.
It all made sense, it, just from the leaflet.
It did. It was like, I had a knowingness. I think so many people do have that in there. But it was my wake-up call, and it was the right time, the right place. You never know when somebody's right time and right place is. And I literally went vegan overnight, and then shortly thereafter co-founded an animal rights group in Asheville, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and became very active for animals. I ended up volunteering for and also working for some national animal rights groups. And so that became very important to me. But in the back of my mind, I always held the dream of starting a farmed animal sanctuary, because to me that would be perfect, because you would be rescuing individuals who were hopeless and in dire straits, and you would be able to witness their lives transform. And, you know, that's just so powerful and so beautiful to watch, and to watch their lives unfold, and they learn to trust and their personalities blossom. So you not only get to save those individuals, but then those very same individuals become ambassadors for others of their kind by, you know, having visitors come to your sanctuary. And I always say the animals are the best ambassadors, because they touch people just by being themselves more than I can by talking all day long.
Yeah.
So to me, it's perfect because it's outreach and it's rescue combined.
Right. Mm-hmm. I thought it was such a cool concept. And I moved to Georgia. It's going to be almost 2 years. It's almost 2 years now. It will be 2 years in May. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for different outlets to volunteer and explore. And that's how I found Full Circle Farm Sanctuary. And I just thought it was the most genius concept ever. I looked for it specifically before, but I haven't seen that before. So when you were imagining that idea for yourself, did you see that happen somewhere before, or did you just...
Well, yeah, there, you know, Farm Sanctuary in New York has been around a long time. So they're kind of the grandfather or the grandmother of all the farm sanctuaries in the United States. So they were setting a great example for a long time. But I believe even from an early age, probably even, you know, before I became vegan and an activist, I always dreamed of, you know, even as a kid, having my own place where animals would be safe from suffering. Mm-hmm. You know, when I witnessed, for example, cows on our farm being hauled onto the truck to go to slaughter, I could not only see the terror in their eyes, but feel it. I felt very empathic. I could feel their anguish, and it just internally was hurt me so badly. And I wished so bad that I could have a place where they could be safe, you know, even as a child thinking that way. So I would say the seed of this goes way, way back. And it was after my awakening that the reality of, I want to really create that came alive.
So it was almost like recreating some of the memories and some of the structure that you had when you were growing up with being close to animals and close to nature, except doing it in a much more compassionate way, where animals would be actually not raised, but where they would be, what they would have lives, fulfilling and
just rich lives. Their value is being themselves. Like we always say here, our animals just get to be themselves. Like we don't try to make an animal. If an animal, a particular individual animal, doesn't want to interact with visitors, that's their choice. We don't force them, like, come on, you have to learn to be interactive. No, we have animals who love interacting with people, and we have some who are more shy or, you know, want to stay in the distance, just like people. We all have our own personalities. So do they. And so we allow them to be themselves, and I just think that's the beauty of it. And I always say it's a privilege to be here among them and get to witness the richness of their intellectual lives and their social lives. And not everybody gets to witness that. So, but that's the power of one of the powers of a farmed animal sanctuary. People can come here and witness that for themselves.
I love that. I read a few of the interviews that you gave before, and I just love the language that you use about us having the privilege of interacting with them rather than the other way around. I think it's really beautiful. I see it's a pretty prevalent, I don't know if I should call it mind trap or a trick that a lot of us used, where we're able to, I mean, the pet industry, where we spend so much money, so much millions and millions of dollars on leashes and pet food and vitamins and on our dogs and cats. But at the same time, many people fail to see the same intelligence or the same value in the animals that are treated, quote unquote, farm animals. Could you speak on that? Where do you think that lies, and how do you think that could be overcome?
Well, I think it's all socialization. I think if you look at children, children are born kind and caring, and they have a natural affinity for animals. That's mm-hmm. just in their DNA. And I really feel like society tries to get us from a young age, and accomplishes from a young age, to get us to compartmentalize our kindness and our compassion. We are taught that, no, this dog is a friend and to be related to this way, but a cow, that's food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even in the veterinary schools, like the animal ag veterinary schools, because I know people that have gone through them, they are, every day it's drilled into them. No, these are objects. They don't feel, they don't suffer. They don't, it's not, they're not the same as like dogs and cats or us. So it's, but I feel like we're bombarded from early age on up to, you know, oh, look at the little happy pigs dancing on the sign at the barbecue place. You know, it's just like, it's so, it's actually, to me, sick. And it's, yeah. it's to me, child abuse, because children naturally love animals. So twisting and distorting things to rob them of that innocence and mm-hmm. that relationship that would, I feel, naturally develop is a crime. So I think it, we have to change the whole way that society socializes, and the whole, we need a whole paradigm shift toward compassion.
Yeah. I love the expression they use, compartmentalized compassion. Mm-hmm. It is so true, because I mean, we are there people today, we express so much love in all these many outlets, but mm-hmm. then there, it seems to be like these other outlets and channels that seem to be cut off, as you said, at yeah. early age, and we just can't make it. And I remember growing up in Ukraine, so especially when I was growing up, I didn't know any vegetarians or vegans at that point at all. But of course, at least we got to see that the animals, the production of food wasn't as commercialized as it is in America. And I still remember, like, all the cows that I knew at my grandmother's village, they had names, mm-hmm. like the chickens, the roosters, like the goats, they mm-hmm. had names. And I remember having this cognitive dissonance of, well, everybody loves them, they're so smart, they come when you call them, mm-hmm. but then at the same time, there's this glooming foreshadowing that at some point, they will become food.
Right.
And I could never, and like, I remember not being able to really acknowledge that, because everybody else, I would look around and everybody act like it's just, it's fine, that's right. how it works. And I remember being so confused
yes.
about it.
I totally understand. Yeah, it's completely cognitive dissonance is it. That's what we're taught. We're taught to dissociate like that. And mm-hmm. it's very sad. And, you know, the richness of their personalities, they're every bit as interesting as a dog or a cat. And, you know, intellect, you know, pigs are smarter than dogs.
I was hoping you could speak of that. I remember that last year when I did the tour here with you, and actually in this room, I remember Jackie, I believe, yes. speaking about how pigs are, based on research or science, they're equal in intelligence to three-year-old child, yes. human child. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I even think that underestimates their intelligence, because that's comparing their intelligence. Like, in other words, a pig's intelligence is serves them in their world,
right.
just like a cow's intelligence serves them in their world, or a sheep's does in their world. And to try to compare one to the other, I feel like actually their intelligence is so much bigger than that, because it allows them to survive and function and navigate through their world.
I like that. It's like comparing a swimmer to a runner,
right? Exactly, yes. And, you know, even in the society where if you're an animal rights advocate and... for example, if somebody makes a joke about looking at a pig and saying, oh, there's my bacon or something, and especially they say that knowing that the person next to them, for example, would be a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't laugh with them, which of course it's not funny, but if you don't, then they act like, oh, wow, can't you take a joke? Why are you so serious? But can you imagine if we made a joke about human child abuse?
Right.
And we expect, say, oh, come on, can't you laugh about it? They would be offended, and rightly so. Well, it's offensive to denigrate non-human beings in that way too, because they have their feeling beings just like us, and they're worthy of our respect. So it really, in other words, it cuts both ways. We should respect the richness and depth of these animals' lives.
I like that analogy, and what came to me in mind with parallel with comparisons with the Me Too movement and women empowerment, just catcalling on women like that. People don't think it's funny, even though like back in the day somebody would be maybe pushed into laughing at it. But today, like, you can just like call out and name and make a dirty joke. Like, it's not no longer socially acceptable.
Right.
So I really have so much hope that, you know, sometimes driving around and seeing all those billboards or the old barbecue places, like there is this one place that I drive by and there is a pig and somebody else and their barbecue and they're playing cards. And I was like, this is so wrong. This is so not funny. And I just really wish and cannot wait for a time when those things, they just will no longer be appropriate.
Oh, I know.
I believe it's coming. It's just, I hope they'll hurry up.
I know. That's how I feel. I believe it's coming too. And I think, you know, there's so much more we have to achieve, but we're getting closer and closer to that tipping point, I believe. I mean, I can see, you know, I've been a vegan since, 1989. So I see great changes and I have a lot of hope. But it can never come fast enough because they're still suffering so much. But this is kind of going into another track a little, but I wanted to, if you don't mind,
absolutely,
go back to my childhood and reveal a little more. When I was growing up, I had a lot of confusion inside and about my own like gender identity. And so I had a lot of things I held inside and didn't share because I thought, oh, you know, this will not be accepted in this world. And I didn't even understand as a child. I felt like a little girl, but in a boy's body. So one of the reasons I feel I especially empathize with animals was I felt like they were trapped in this system. And I could empathize with that, where there was seemed to be no way out for them. And it was very sad to me. And yet, and I felt very trapped. And I felt like we were both trapped together and we cared about one another, and yet we were powerless to get out. And so I flash forward to my life now because I'm a transsexual woman, and I feel like, how can we, as considered, you know, an oppressed group of people, how can we expect others to respect and have compassion for us and our rights if we don't extend that to those who are also that have bigotry against them and judgment and violence committed against them day in, day out, and it's just societally accepted? And, you know, the animals have it so much worse than I could ever imagine. And so in my own community, the LGBTQ community, I'm like, that's very important to me, because I feel like with my own community, I want to get the message out, like, if we don't extend that compassion, we can't expect that to be given to us. It's very powerful because it's liberating too. You acknowledge others who are going through their own struggles and you want to do something to help them. I think it's a powerful
thing. This is so beautiful, and I'm so glad you shared that, because I read it in some of the interviews as well, and I was thinking actually about it on my drive here, just how the feeling, you know how they say that the cracks is where the light enters our heart. So sometimes I feel like sometimes we need to be almost brought on our knees or experience some kind of pain so that we can fill our hearts with love and extend it to other people as well. And I really love the way you put it. It's just so beautiful. Being in that situation, being in a group that is oppressed, and then having an ability to empathize with others, with other groups, but who are experiencing the same, and being able to extend the same kind of love to them. I mean, I feel like it, for some people and for you, obviously, it just unleashes this incredible loving power that is then able to go through different channels and have help other people hopefully do the same and see it in the same light. So it's just, we're very lucky to have you as a speaker on all those different platforms.
Thank you. I feel it's my honor and privilege. And you know, I think the key is figuring out how to tap into people's empathy, because I think on some level most people have empathy in there, and if we can figure out how to get them to tap into it, I think that is a big key for us to work on as a community, figuring out how to.
Yeah. Do you have any insight on that? From what I'm seeing, it looks like pointing out more of commonalities versus the differences, and showing, leading by example rather than pointing out the flaws in each other.
Yeah.
I think those maybe.
I do. I do think that's more the commonalities. I think you're right. It's very big. I think because I see it here whenever we have visitors. You know, when you see people, whether they're adults or children, and you can catch when they're zoning in on each other and they're starting, and they even will make comments that let you know they're starting to see, like if you're up close to a pig, for example, and look in their eyes are so deep and they look so much like our eyes. And I've had people comment on that, how, oh, there's a person in there. You know, they're starting to relate to them, empathize with them. I think, so I feel like that's one of the unique things about a sanctuary is it's the animals are so powerful. When you have animals living in peace, surrounded by love, allowed to be themselves, they're not all stressed out and worried and being loaded on trucks to go to slaughter. And, you know, animals pick up on things and they know what's happening. So when they know they're safe, they can really relax and be themselves. And then that way people get to really know them better and relate to them better. So the key is for us, what we're always trying to figure out is how to get more people out here.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
That makes sense, because you can't. It's hard to be compassionate for something you haven't seen before in person, and pictures just don't do the justice.
Right.
And I mean, there's also plenty of studies, social studies, about from the perspective of racism and different opinions in that area, to where it's the people who are most quote unquote racist are simply the people who just haven't been exposed to the different nationalities and who don't know anybody personally.
Right.
And that's such a good point. I just put the two and two together.
Well, I mean, I've heard it from volunteers, visitors, people on the tours. I'm thinking right now of the chickens in particular, but not just the chickens, but it just popped in my mind. We've had people come out and just say, after spending a day here volunteering or visiting, and they're like, I never realized chickens had such personalities. They're all, each one's different. And they're so, some of them are more shy and elusive, and some of them come right up to me and want to eat grapes out of my hand. Mm. They're talking with me. And they're just amazed, because I think somehow or other we see birds as so different from us. You know, they look more different. They have feathers and beaks and stuff. So maybe we somehow think they're otherworldly, just like fish, because they live in a different element than us and look so different. But I think it's, that, again, another example of how powerful it is as a sanctuary, because they get to meet and know these individuals and they really touch their lives. You know, when we had our turkey Charlie, who passed away a few months ago, sadly, I know, it's very sad. She was a great ambassador and touched so many hearts. And when she passed away and we posted about her on Facebook, we had so many people comment about her and what a difference she made in their lives. And they never, until they met her, they didn't realize just how beautiful turkeys were inside with their personalities. And they were making comments like, they're the same as my dog or my cat. Mm-hmm. You know, I never knew that. So you never know what a big impact these animals have on somebody, you know, long after they visited and are gone.
That's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love how you refer to them as individuals, how you highlight that they have personalities, how they're all different. And I also remember when doing a tour here last year and doing the orientation, just learning about, I mean, you knew and the people who were kind of leading us mm-hmm. around the sanctuary, everybody knew everybody's name, everybody's stories. And some of the stories, like the stories of some of the friendships that some of the birds, I believe, that a few birds here, mm-hmm. I remember that, I think there was like a black chicken.
Francesca.
Yeah, that's right. Like those stories. Just the stories themselves, it's incredible. Yeah. Like the richness of their lives that goes unseen and unexperienced because of the sheer number of animals that get slaughtered every year. It's just devastating.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And that's why it's so important to have sanctuaries, because people, then they get to actually witness those stories that aren't seen or heard, because those poor animals by the millions and billions are going down the slaughterhouse lines, you know. And you know, you mentioned Francesca. She was good friends with Tita, a little chicken with crossbeak. It's a deformity mm-hmm. where their beak doesn't line up, and they can have great trouble eating and breathing. And Tita came along with Francesca when they arrived here, and Francesca was a little bigger than Tita. And she just watched over Tita. She wouldn't let Tita out of her sight. And little Tita would sleep under her, under her wing, under her legs. And if we were giving, we had to give little Tita little baths often, because she would get, we had to give her a special liquid diet, and mm-hmm. it would get on her feathers. And we would take her to the sink to wash her off. And Francesca had to jump up on the counter and be right there watching over her friend and talking to her as she was being treated. And whenever Tita would go to the doctor for treatments and such, we always brought Francesca, and Francesca would stay overnight with her. They were good friends, you know, she wouldn't leave her, and she was emotional support. And what I really liked was even the doctors at UGA, for example, they acknowledged the importance of that emotional support. And I thought it was beautiful
wow.
that veterinarians in the animal ag were acknowledging that, you know, and mm-hmm. so I really, that meant a lot to me. So you never know who you influence. You know, a sanctuary, that's another area we influence people, is we deal with these animal ag schools where they teach the students to just be, that animals are just automatons without feelings. Well, we go in there with, you know, so obviously caring about our animals that we'll go to any length to help them mm-hmm. that I can definitely tell you we've touched many of those students and the doctors. I've had doctors, I actually can think of one doctor who actually went vegan.
Wow.
And said it was because of, through the summer, her interactions with us visiting with our animals, that it made her think. And she said to me one day, you know, I feel guilty that I'm eating chickens. And I said, well, did you ever think, you know, the reason you're feeling guilty, that's your conscience pricking at you? You know, rather than force it on her, I would just answer her questions and say, you know, if you're feeling that, it's something to think about, your conscience. Mm-hmm. You know? And then she did. She went vegan. And some, and the students, a couple of the student veterinarians did too, and they were having a vegan day, one day where everybody would bring in vegan food. You know, so
that is so cool. That is so amazing. Just mm-hmm. And I'm sure, I mean, there are probably many more and thousands of lives that you influence, but just that is mm-hmm. is priceless.
It really is.
Okay, so can we talk a little bit more about the farm sanctuary mm-hmm. history? So how long ago has it been mm-hmm. open, and kind of what are your main areas you're focusing on? Where you part, who you're partnering with?
Okay, well, I started this Full Circle Farm Sanctuary back in North Carolina near Asheville in 2010, mm-hmm. and on a tiny little piece of land. It was only an acre and a half on the side of a slope of a little mountain. So it was far from ideal, the location. It was like, you know, very limited in space on this slope. We could only have, you know, much fewer animals and much, much, we were out in the middle of nowhere. It was hard to find us. And I knew in the back of my mind that, you know, this isn't going to work for what I want to create long term, mm-hmm. but for now it is. And I just somehow knew this was going to manifest, you know, this vision I had and this dream I had for so long. And sure.
That is so cool that you had that assurance.
Well, I think it sounds kind of corny, but I really do think you have to hold out hope and belief and don't let go of that and be tenacious and continue on where you're at. Like, you know, yes, we were only on an acre and a half, but we had 40 some animals.
Wow.
We couldn't have cows and larger animals. We had, although we had three pigs.
Who did you have?
Our very first animals were Penny the pig, who's here now.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and Zephyr the goat, who's out there, and no other rooster, who sadly he did pass just before we moved down here. But he got to live several years up there. But we were able, through the generosity of an anonymous donor, to move down here and acquire this, originally, this 50 acres.
And where did you get those animals? Where those animals came from?
Oh, the animals back in North Carolina? Mm-hmm. Well, from various situations. Our first animals, Penny and Zephyr and Noah, were actually, Penny the pig escaped from a farm.
Wow.
And somehow, you know, we'll never know exactly how, but she ended up at the local Humane Society. And so did Zephyr. But she ended up there through, you know, who knows how she escaped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she's quite wise. We consider her our wise matriarch. So we're not surprised she figured out how to get away.
That is amazing.
But what happened was, when we realized she was at the Humane Society, and the Humane Society was moving to another location where they couldn't keep farmed animals.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a limited amount of time. They had to find a place for her. And we wanted to rescue her and make sure she didn't go somewhere where she would be killed. So we, 12 of us, I grabbed some volunteers together, and we put up fence in one weekend and a makeshift house for her. And we went and got her. We hired somebody to transport her in their in their trailer, transport trailer. And that's how we started.
That is so cool. That's the coolest story ever. Doesn't Humane Society, don't they only do like the cats and dogs?
Well, a lot of them only,
it depends.
Well, a lot of them only do cats and dogs, but you, more and more of them, you will find taking in other animals too, like goats, even pigs, roosters,
awesome.
Other animals, rabbits. So we have several of our animals that are here now have come through like some of the Humane Society, some of the shelters in the Atlanta area and such. But they all have a story. We have another pig, Thelma Lou, who she escaped from a factory farm in eastern North Carolina. And she doesn't have a tail. You know, they cut off their tails and without anesthetic, and they pull out some of their teeth with no anesthetic, and the males have their testicles ripped off with no anesthetic. So she has that reminder of what she escaped from, but she too was able to escape. We have a hen named Lucy, who would be considered, I don't like the term, but in the industry, which she would call a broiler chicken.
Mm-hmm.
She fell off a truck, you know, these horrible trucks that transport these chickens in all weather extremes, crammed into the cages with broken wings and respiratory problems. And she fell off the truck and was injured, and a kind woman picked her up, took her to the veterinarian, rescued her, and contacted us, and we took her in. And now she's thriving. And we have her on a special diet because, you know, these poor Cornish cross hens, known as broilers, they're genetically manipulated to grow so large, so fast that their bodies give out underneath them. They have respiratory problems. They tend to get heart attacks early in life. So we have her on a strict diet so we can try to keep her weight down. And we have her in an area where she can exercise out in the sun.
That's amazing.
She has friends.
That's amazing. That is so cool. I love the stories. Mm-hmm. And part of my ignorance is chicken an appropriate word? Or what's the difference between chicken and a hen?
Oh, chicken would be if you call them chickens, that's the overarching term for their species. So that would refer to the chickens and the roosters.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hens would be the females and the roosters the males.
Okay, yeah. That's what
But they're all chickens.
Got it. Okay, good. I'm in the green. Okay, so and then you move to Georgia.
Yes, we were fortunate enough to get an anonymous foundational donor to help us out. The foundation had, unbeknownst to me, had watched me through the course of my life. I had worked for PETA internationally and had traveled all over the world, literally promoting animal rights. And they apparently had been watching me and knew that I was what I would call the real deal, like I was really out there for animals. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but So that I've heard. Cool. But so they approached me, and I'll tell you the truth. At first, I thought it was some kind of a joke. Like, these people want to help me get this large sanctuary where I can really help a lot of animal and reach so many people. And I had to, it took some time for me to believe it was for real and not a joke. Mm-hmm. But it was very real. And
that is incredible. Isn't it funny how sometimes we're like wary of receiving exactly yes. what it is we dreamed of, but here it is in front of us and we can't believe it's there.
I know, it's so true. And you know, it just restores your faith though that there are such beautiful, caring people out there.
Absolutely.
You know, who are willing to put their money for such good, worthy causes and to help animals and help the downtrodden. So it really does lift your spirits that, oh, there's such beautiful people out there.
That's amazing. Okay, so you move here and you're supported by some of the anonymous donors.
Well,
and then
what they did, they helped us acquire this property and put in the infrastructure, like cross fencing, structures like barns and coops and various buildings that we needed and all kinds of, you know, equipment. It takes a lot of money to take care of farmed animals, and we have nearly 200.
Wow.
So it's a lot, and they helped us. They were so generous. But what we want to make sure people realize is we are being helped to get up off our feet, but it's not endless.
Right.
Like, we need to increase our donations. We rely upon donations. It's not like we just have money appear to us. That was just to get us started. And now we have to sustain ourselves, which requires, you know, caring people everywhere to donate. They can sponsor an animal for so much a month and actually make a difference in an individual animal's life. And they'll get an update through the mail or email on their animal that they sponsor. They can come and volunteer. You know, we need volunteer help so much. To take care of this many animals, we do have a small staff, but they can't do everything. We literally rely upon volunteers. We say volunteers and donors and sponsors are the lifeblood of our organization.
And how can people volunteer here?
People can volunteer if they go to our website, which is fullcirclefarmsanctuary.org, and they can click on the volunteer link and sign up to come to one of our volunteer work days. And we also have a nice vegan potluck at the end of the work day, so we all get to socialize.
It's amazing, by the way.
Yeah, we have some great cooks that bring some food, I'll tell you. And so people come out and are with like-minded people around the animals. And we've had several volunteers who've been very faithful coming out regularly who they thank us for letting them come. And we say, well, thank you for, you know, putting in such work and sweat. And they say, oh, but it's such a privilege because it's almost like meditation to be in a peaceful surrounding, surrounded by beautiful animals, and knowing that you're making a difference. You're actually doing something to help them, and it feels good.
Mm-hmm. It's right there in front of you.
Yes.
What kind of work are you looking for to get help on?
Well, you know, of course, there's all the physical work on site, which is cleaning stalls, cleaning barns, grooming animals, socializing animals, very important, you know. Even mowing lawns. We want to start an organic garden, but, you know, we need...
That is awesome.
Yeah. Even pasture maintenance. We have people learning to drive tractors and haul things, and then...
Formula One for tractors.
Yeah. building fences, fixing fences. Mm-hmm. Today we have volunteers moving some cattle panels, they're called. They're mobile fencing units to put up a new fence around a new house. So it's endless. Cutting down branches that are, or damage from a storm, clearing away some damage. It's painting. I mean, it really goes, even cleaning our barn kitchen, cleaning the bathroom. And then we need volunteers to help even for our tours, to help show people. If somebody doesn't want to do heavy labor, it's also showing people where to park their car, welcoming them at the gate, serving vegan food samples that we give at all our tours. So there's really something for everyone. And, you know, we even can use help with data entry if people are good at that, or
Marketing, probably.
Yes, absolutely. And we also have, for example, a volunteer coming next week who's very artistic, and she's going to be painting some signs, like names for our various houses, animal houses, that she's going to put up. And they're going to be real cute and unique. So
that's really cool.
Whatever people's talents are, we have so many different things we can use.
Yeah. Are you working with anybody, just curious, for your gardens? Because I've just recently heard some workshops on gardening.
We haven't yet, to be honest. We have a spot right out here that's been used as a garden in the past, the people that lived here before, and we've seen pictures. It's a beautiful garden. But we haven't. I'll tell you the truth. We've just been so busy that it's been neglected. So
maybe I can check on that.
Yeah, if anyone is interested in helping with that, boy, that would be great. Because if we can grow some great organic produce, you know, we feed that to the animals. It's right. So good for them. Mm-hmm. And then we're planning to open a B&B, we hope, later this year. You know, and
that space is so beautiful.
It is, isn't it? And it's perfectly located. It's dropped down right in the middle of the property. Mm-hmm. With a wraparound deck and beautiful views, I mean like 60-mile views. So if you walk around on the deck of the house, you have animals all around you in different pastures.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, that goes with our name, Full Circle. We have a full circle of animals around
you. I love that's true.
So, and we do vegan cooking classes up there in the lodge. It's called Changing Winds Lodge. And as soon as we get our new barn built, we will be able to open our B&B. And the beauty of that is it allows people to stay and just immerse themselves in the lives of farmed animals. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that. We have people asking us all the time, when are you going to open your B&B? I want to come stay. So we're eager to get that going.
Yeah. And now what other things you host? I remember seeing you there are different classes of making your own soap.
Yes. And we did, and we will do more yoga in the fields with the animals and chocolate making class. Even we had, as part of that, we had essential oils making.
That's right. I saw that one too.
We're going to have our first summer day camp for kids this year called Camp Caring.
That is genius.
Yeah. That's going to be in June, and it's for kids 8 to 14.
Okay.
And it's really all about teaching them compassion and how animals are like us, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get to do a lot of hands-on stuff, and it's going to be great. We're excited about that.
How can people sign up for that?
Again, go to our website, fullcirclefarmsanctuary.org, and it's right there on the homepage, all the information. Camp Caring is what it's called.
That is so cool. Yes, I love the idea about socializing kids and giving kids the exposure and teaching them the skills. So, again, going back to my childhood, my grandmother had a pretty tough upbringing herself, and she grew up in the village, and everybody had to do a lot of work every morning. Everybody would rise very, very early with the chickens and with the roosters singing early in the morning. And I remember that she kind of installed that work ethic in me very early on. And one of the things that me and my two cousins had to do every summer is we had to volunteer a day or a few days with this beautiful family that we knew that was the family, my grandmother's friends. And we basically would live a day with them and help them with everything they did. So we would wake up early in the morning and, you know, go and tend to the animals and then like work in the garden. And just something about being there the whole day in nature and immersed in this labor. But then at the same time, it felt like so rewarding, like having your feet on the ground.
Yes.
It's just.
I agree. And that's,
we're so far removed from that today.
We are. And the B&B experience will give people that. They can get up with the crowing of the roosters like I do every day. I love the sound of the crowing.
Natural
roosters.
Alarm.
I know all their crows. I can tell who's crowing. And I've got actually crowing in stereo now because we've got roosters on all sides of the house just about, so I can hear them all around. But people can choose to get up early and come out and help with chores, or when we get our garden going, helping with that. I mean, there's just, it's going to be great. We're excited.
That is really cool.
And we do field trips too. We have, we're getting more and more people, you know, schools come out, even adult groups that come out. We have a women's garden club coming in April for a field trip.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we're excited about all that too.
It seems like there's a lot of different really cool events happening here.
Yes.
So that's awesome.
And we're only going to add more. We're going to be adding more and more vegan cooking classes. Those are always popular. They usually sell out. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking forward to adding more of those, especially during the summer season.
Yeah, and for all of that, you can sign up through the website.
Yes, all at the website, fullcirclefarmsanctuary.org.
And is there a newsletter that you can also sign up for and really find you about all the...
Yes, we do a monthly newsletter that updates everyone on what's going on here. And that's also on our website. You can, it's real quick. It takes you a minute to sign up.
Sounds good. I'll put all the links in the show notes as well afterwards. Let's see. I had a few more questions. What is your vision of the future vision of going forward? If everything could grow and expand just the way you wanted, that you could build the way you wanted, where do you see Full Circle Farm Sanctuary
in the future? I see us attracting more and more visitors and families to come out. We have a lot of ideas for some big events. I want to, for example, I don't know if you know this, but we're located right up against FDR State Park. Our property borders FDR State Park. You can literally walk right over into FDR State Park and hike on their trails, and there's waterfalls over there. It's the largest state park in Georgia.
That is amazing.
So I want to organize every year a hike for the animals where it can be a fundraiser where people can hike, and it'd be great because they can go as a family or as friends, and it's an enjoyable experience in nature. And then they can come over onto the sanctuary afterwards, and we'll have like a little festival over here. We'll invite vegan businesses from Atlanta to set up booths and display their vegan items. And people can come in for a suggested donation and see all these vegan items and vegan businesses. So we're promoting the vegan businesses. And then they get to also mingle with our animals and get to know the sanctuary and go on a tour of the sanctuary. And so that I'm excited about. I'm also wanting to construct an events pavilion so we can host vegan weddings.
Yes, I was just about to ask that.
We have people asking us about that already. Like, can we get married there? Because it's a beautiful place to get married. And, you know, people would love to get married around the animals and this whole kind of peaceful setting, serene setting. So that's big on our list. I also look, you know, further into the future. I have ideas like even a vegan restaurant. Mm-hmm. Some things I don't want to give away quite yet.
That's okay.
But I have a lot going on in my head all the time, like this and that. And but just expanding the experience here, partnering with other, like there's a hotel going up down the road, only about a mile or two. A Best Western, and I found out the person who owns it is vegetarian.
Ooh.
So even like say if we host a big wedding here, and of course people stay in our B&B, but they have a lot more people that need a place to stay, we could partner with that big hotel, and we could offer deals, packages, things like that by partnering together. And I heard he's going to serve the Beyond Burger at his
Best Western.
Yeah,
that is so cool. Yeah, the opportunities are limitless. I almost see it as instead of like an entertainment park, it could be a compassion building park. Mm-hmm. You know, like so where instead of like families going to Disney and to having that experience, you can come here and get to know the animals and breathe in fresh air and get some serenity.
Yes, and we do want to have, I didn't mention, we want to have an education center too.
Oh, yes.
Where they really can learn so much about what goes on in animal agriculture and also learn all about the animals themselves and their personalities and their characteristics and the stories of rescue, because we have just, you know, beautiful stories that we share on our tours. People love our tours when they come to them. We get so much positive feedback from people. So, yeah, we just want to keep... the goal for us is... The biggest overarching goal is to get more and more people to come out here. So we want, for example, to make Atlanta, the whole Atlanta area, aware that we're here.
Yes.
Right now, we feel like the vegan community, a lot of them know we're here. But a lot of the non-vegan community doesn't know we're here. So advertising campaigns to get them down here so we can reach so many more people. That's very important to us.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Is there anything else that you want to add before I ask my last question about kindness?
Let's see.
Any highlights for the listeners? some takeaways?
Sure. Well, I would like to say I would love people to come to our vegan chili cook-off.
Oh, yes. That's coming up.
Yes. On March 31st in Atlanta. And if you go to our website, again, fullcirclefarmsanctuary.org, you can sign up just to come and try the chilies and vote. You get to vote on your favorite chilies. You can also sign up to make a chili. So we want to throw out the challenge. If you think you've got a great recipe, come enter your chili because you could win a prize and bragging rights that you won.
Right.
So this is the first one we've done in Atlanta, but it's our fourth annual since we started back in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing coming up. And then we have an event on the property here at the sanctuary on May 5th. We're calling Jammin' with Jade. Jade is one of our sheep, and he's very, very loving and lovable. And people just, on our tours, he notoriously reaches hearts. People just fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our animals do, but he's known for that especially. And so we named the event after him. And we're going to have all kinds of delicious food and music and mingling with the animals, and like an open house for the animals in
that's
the springtime.
Really cool. So that is May 5th.
May 5th, Jammin' with Jade. It's also on our website.
That's great.
So come on out.
Sounds good. That's great. And so can you tell me what kindness means to you and how do you get to act on that value intentionally every day?
Okay. Well, kindness means to me, personally, realizing that all of us, in my opinion, are here on the earth to be of service. We really are, and in one way or another. And you can, along with that, you can feel, you can say, oh, I feel sentimental toward this or that, and oh, I feel badly about that if you see someone suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you put your compassion into action, it doesn't do anybody any good. So to me, kindness is putting your compassion into action, because action is all important. It is life-saving. It literally can be life-saving and life-transforming. So that's what kindness means to me, putting your compassion into action.
That is beautiful.
And that's what we encourage here every day, and that's what we do here every day. And that's what I guess that would be the takeaway when people leave here after visiting. We would want them to learn about how powerful it is to put their compassion into action.
That is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to steal that as a quote.
Thank
with you. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kyla. And I'm looking forward to many more conversations, and you'll be seeing me here, and I hope many, many more people, and we'll build it into the biggest dream that you have.
Well, thank you for including us in your podcast, and we wish you all the best with that. And it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
About the upcoming events, there is a fundraiser that's coming up on May the 5th. It's going to be called Jammin' with Jade. You can check out more details at the Full Circle Farm Sanctuary Facebook page, as well as the tickets. It sounds like a fun event with some vegan food, raffle tickets. Kyla will be a speaker there. Another thing Kyla wanted me to mention was Full Circle Farm Sanctuary are currently in the middle of building a barn that they very much need, and it will house animal infirmary, surgical rooms, several stalls, feed rooms, wash stall, office, and some other stuff they need space for. And any donations are greatly appreciated and much needed, and all donations made to Full Circle Farm Sanctuary through 2018 are going to be matched by anonymous donor. For more information, you can go to followyourkind.com or follow me on Instagram at kindchristina. Please also subscribe to the show and give me a good review. Thanks for stopping by.